Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and some of you may be interested in my Wednesday night television show where web video meets the issues. Tonight's videos include a computer animation of Flight 1549 landing in the Hudson with the actual audio from the cockpit. That's tonight at 7:30 on CUNY TV, Channel 75, on the New York City cable systems. Well, as you know, hearings taking place on the Hill right now about AIG include expected testimony from Ed Liddy, their CEO. He has released a statement with some of the things that he's going to say, but members of Congress are taking so much time making their opening statements that he hasn't actually gotten to say any of this stuff yet. Apparently, a lot of average Americans have been lining up around the block to get into these hearings, which doesn't happen all that much in Congress. And everyone is, of course, expecting Liddy to get grilled and drilled about the bonuses that AIG paid out with bailout money. So to update where we stand and to help us listen to some clips of Liddy, if he starts during the show, and of some of the members of Congress who we do have, Diane Brady, senior editor at Businessweek. Hi, Diane.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. So much of the morning so far has been devoted to members of the committee offering opening statements. And as we updated earlier in the show, most Republicans are looking at the bailouts themselves. Then there's Barney Frank and other Democrats talking about the bonus issue. But let's take a listen first to Congressman Jeb Hensarling, Republican from Texas, who summed up the basic GOP position.
With respect to the TARP program, this AIG bonus scandal is simply the outrage of the week, and the week is not yet half over. The greater outrage should be the almost $180 billion of taxpayer exposure and growing. The greater outrage ought to be four bailouts later, no end in sight, and no plan of sustainability or exit strategy that has been explained to this committee. The greater outrage ought to be taxpayer money used to sustain counterparties, to make them whole, counterparties who undertook a risk versus taxpayers who did not take the risk. And finally, the greater outrage ought to be over a Congress and a president who could have prevented all of this.
So Diane Brady from Businessweek, even before we hear one word from Ed Liddy, the head of AIG, is this turning into partisan posturing by the Democrats and Republicans on the committee?
Well, I think everyone's trying to outrage each other. There's no question about that. But I think the Republicans have been trying to sort of poke holes in TARP for quite some time. So, yes, it's clearly partisan. But I think the bonuses this week, it's just such a light, such a symbol, really, of everything that's wrong on Wall Street, everything that's been wrong with this whole sort of debacle with the economy. I think that's really going to be what gets people angry today. Yes, the overall questions of AIG, we're addressing that. I think that people are angry. They don't see an end in sight. But the reality is people understand that if AIG fails, there could be a big domino effect. So I think that that's sort of been the simmering anger, but what really gets you outraged is thinking that there are millionaires coming out of this one small unit that helped to bring the company down.
And listeners, do you want AIG executives to pay the bonuses back? Call us up. Heck yes, heck no, don't bother. This is all a distraction from the larger scandal of AIG paying out all our taxpayer money to other banks, as Elliot Spitzer and others have argued here. 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. Give us a call. What do you think about this whole AIG thing? Are members of Congress, is even the Obama administration using it as a distraction from some larger questions and maybe even their own failings? Wall Street Journal editorial page was all about that yesterday. They're using this as a distraction from their own failings, if not to regulate, then to monitor where this TARP money is going. 212-433-9692. Give us a call. And let's play another clip. Diane, the testimony, as you know, has started, if not with Ed Liddy. And the first person they heard from was Scott Polakoff. He's the head of the government's Office of Thrift Management. And he, like many others, wasn't going to touch the bonus question with a 20-foot pole. Instead, he looked forward. Let's listen.
As to where we go from here, I see two important lessons learned. Number one, the credit default swaps at the center of AIG's problems continue to be unregulated products. New regulations governing these complex derivative products are essential. The announcement by the President's Working Group on Financial Markets in November of last year to implement a central counterparty service for credit default swaps is a good beginning. And number two, the AIG story makes a compelling argument for establishing a systemic risk regulator with the authority to examine the resources to address temporary liquidity crises and the legal authority to perform receivership activities if a failure is unavoidable. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me to testify. I look forward to answering questions.
So Diane Brady from Businessweek, translate that into plain English for us. I guess he's saying, yeah, everybody's talking about these bonuses because they're in the news, but these hearings were scheduled weeks ago before Andrew Cuomo and Barney Frank and the president decided to take a big public stand about the bonuses, and there are really larger issues to deal with here, correct?
There is, and I think it's also, there's, in the same way that everyone's trying to criticize how the TARP money is being spent, everyone's trying to pretend that these credit default swaps were some shadowy other world that nobody knew about. The fact is, there is a lot of regulation. There is a lot of oversight. It's just that nobody was actually telling people to stop. We all watched as these banks went, you know, and leveraged themselves up 35-1. AIG knew what was going on. The fact is they allowed them to go too far out, take too many risks. Is that a question of not having the laws, or is it just a question of essentially not saying, you know, you're putting the company in jeopardy here? So I think there's a lot of different issues that are going to be addressed with AIG. But I think the most immediate question is the taxpayer money, how it's being spent. We saw this week the list of companies that got that money that we thought was going to AIG. That became public. I'm sure there'll be a lot of pressure for some names of the people who actually received the bonuses, too. I think taxpayers are just angry about how their money's being spent, and that's the most immediate and in some ways the most important issue right now.
And I think it's not just that it's executives from AIG, the larger company, when they're getting so much taxpayer money, about $170 billion is the number that I've seen most recently. But the fact that so many of these executives getting big bonuses are from this precise financial products division that dreamed up the genius idea of credit default swaps and doing it at this, you know, huge risk level. So they were so over leveraged at AIG and took out these crazy bets on bad housing loans. These very people themselves are some of the ones getting these big bonuses.
Exactly. And one of the ironies of this is that these are so-called retention bonuses, and many of these people have left. So the whole purpose of the bonus, which was to keep these incredibly valuable people, or so they would have us believe, in place, they left. So they got their $1 million, and then they immediately went out the door. So I think there's a lot of, you know, valid reason for outrage. And I also think that contracts are broken. That's what I think has been fascinating to me in this whole thing, is they keep saying, well, we had a contract, we were obligated to pay. The reality is this is a company that would have gone bankrupt if not for government help. And companies are always going to court to break contracts. I can't imagine taking the U.S. president to court if he says he doesn't want you to get your bonus.
Let's see. Should these contracts be broken? Should the money be paid back? Terry in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Terry.
Hi, Brian. I love your show. I have a tremendous respect for your show and you.
Thank you.
And I'm really grateful that I was able to speak today and get picked up on the call. Basically, I share the previous viewers, the previous talker's views, and I just wanted to ask you or anyone out there, the money should be given back, and I can't believe myself that out of the all, whatever, 72 or 100 of executives who got this money, not one single one decided voluntarily to say, hey, I'm not like all the rest. I realize it's wrong, and I'm offering the money back. I think this guy or this woman, if they were to do that, which would be a tremendous publicity. Fortunately, I don't hear
yes.
anybody doing this.
Terry, so I'm going to leave it there. Interesting idea. Diane Brady, has anybody stepped forward and said, look, I really don't deserve a bonus right now. I'm not going to accept this money.
Well, well if we step outside of AIG, I think, within AIG, no. I think part of it is if I worked in the financial products unit at AIG, I don't think I'd be advertising that fact to people right now. So that's probably another factor at play here.
And look, AIG is a New York company. If you work in the financial products division, call us up. You can even call anonymously and defend your bonus. 212-433-WNYC. Patrick in Bergen County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, how you doing?
Should they give back the bonuses?
Absolutely. The two things I wanted to say was that it seems as if the money that we gave as taxpayers, there were no strings attached or no monitoring of where that money was to go. That's the first problem. The second problem is these contracts, I mean, I've had contracts in with major companies myself. It clearly should have indicated that you receive a bonus based on exceeding certain performance expectations. So none of these men or women exceeded, they failed. And yet everybody's saying that their contracts say that they have to get these bonuses. It absolutely makes no sense. I mean, how can you get a bonus for failing, for bringing a company stock down and running the company into the ground? That's what nobody's talking about. That they're saying, you know, the contracts say that they have to get this money. I don't understand that. How can you receive a bonus for failure,
Patrick? That is the $164 billion question, as far as I'm concerned. Diane, has anybody had to answer that question publicly?
No, and I think it's fascinating because, you know, what happens a lot is you basically get a locked-in bonus, and I think that everyone assumes that a bonus is, okay, you have to deliver 20% growth and then you'll get your $1 million. On Wall Street, oftentimes you get a bonus simply for showing up and being there and doing what many would consider to be the minimum. Also, remember, these are partly retention bonuses. So it wasn't performance. It was to keep these people in place to help unwind what's now considered to be the dirty work that they did. So the fact that the retention bonuses didn't work, I think, is going to get a lot of play. But it's a very good question. What did they deliver? Because, you know, just from where we sit, they delivered the destruction of one of the biggest companies in America.
And tomorrow on our show, economist Simon Johnson is going to come on and explain how corporate America has kind of rebranded the word bonuses in the first place. Bonuses used to be extra money for a job particularly well done. Now we're hearing they're parts of people's contracts, which I guess indicates that they were guaranteed some kind of bonus even before they did any work. But to Patrick's point a little further, these are called retention bonuses, Diane. And why would they be paying people money to stay if they were failures? Why aren't these people being fired?
Well, these are incredibly complex products, as everyone's heard in recent months, and one thing we have to do is wind them down, in essence. And so what they're trying to do is essentially take, you know, $440 billion of credit default swaps and unwind those insurance contracts so that we're not seeing the kind of domino effect that everyone's been scared of. That's one reason why we're seeing the money flowing to these counterparties, which also has got everybody mad. So these are people who understand the market. Now, that doesn't mean they executed it well, obviously, but they want to keep these people in place because they really do understand the minutiae of credit default swaps. I don't, you don't, Brian, many of our listeners don't. They need them, but the point is, do they need to be paid an extra $1 million on top of their salaries to do that? And if they're going to bolt, where are they going to bolt to? Because I can't imagine it's something that having on your resume is going to be a real perk going forward.
Well, that, or how many other multinational insurance companies are there with credit default swap divisions for them to bolt to right now?
Exactly, and I'm sure they're not trying to beef up that unit at the moment.
Right. Karen, writing on our website, with kind of an unintended pun, I think, she writes, yes, they should return the money. It's the principle that counts. Nicholas in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hey, Nicholas.
Hi, Brian. Thanks.
You bet.
You know, you said something before that AIG is a New York company. I just wanted to point out first, if you'll allow, that this financial services division actually was in London, and it consists of just 600, 700 people who were sort of the pirates of the financial world. And I wanted to say the bonuses are extremely important. They're at the center, even though they're a very small sum compared to the overall losses. They're at the center of what happens because they are the incentive for these people to act as they did. And the metaphor I had in mind was of the elephant, which is a very large and magnificent animal, and it weighs 6 tons. And yet, the poacher will kill the elephant just to get the tusks. And the tusks only weigh 50 pounds, and then 6 tons of the dead elephant will just rot on the savanna. And, you know, the tusks are the prize. So, you know, to the traders, the bonuses are why they're in it. The bonuses are why they are doing this, selling these bets, essentially, that some bond will fail, so that in the end you have people claiming 10 times or 100 times the value of the bond when the bond fails. They're willing to do that even though it's unsustainable. They're willing to burn the financial world. Why? Because of their own personal incentive. And I don't think these people should just have to pay back the bonuses. I think AIG needs to be investigated, and a lot of these people probably need to be put into prison.
Diane Brady, before we run out of time, what about his whole theory of the relationship between failure and bonuses? Too conspiratorial, or do you think there's something there?
Well, I think the genotype of people attracted to Wall Street, I mean, they're probably not as, they're not trying to feed the hungry so much as they're trying to, you know, to make a lot of money. So I don't think that's unique to AIG. I do think that the elephant metaphor might work insofar as what backed up these credit default swaps was the heft and prestige and the gold standard of AIG itself, which was a AAA company. They wouldn't have been able to do this in isolation of the company. But to be honest, they're not criminals. They were doing what the head office knew they were doing. They were taking far too much risk. They weren't backing it up with real hard assets. But the fact is that everyone pretty much knew what they were doing, and the credit default swap market grew to be so large because everyone was making bets that housing would continue to rise. So it's unfortunate. They probably won't go to jail for that behavior. The question is, should they be rewarded for that behavior financially?
All right. Now, we're going to listen in just for a minute here on Scott Polakoff. He's the head of the Federal Government Office of Thrift Supervision, being questioned right now by members of Congress. Let's listen right now.
Did the overall holding company at AIG, in doing your assessments of the insurance company, or do you deal solely with the insurance operations?
We deal primarily with the insurance companies. Certainly when we have questions, we kick them up to the holding company level. So the securities lending was actually handled at the holding company
All right,
level.
So not much there to get a handle on right now. That was actually Joel Aereo from the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. But we are going to leave it there, and I do want to apologize for having promoted all morning that we were going to have some of the testimony of Ed Liddy, the CEO of AIG. That testimony was scheduled to begin at 10 o'clock, and they still haven't gotten to him at this hearing. So our apologies for that. Obviously, you can hear clips of that later on WNYC News and All Things Considered with Amy Eddings and company. But I want to thank Diane Brady from Business Week, senior editor, for talking about these hearings with us today and the whole AIG situation. Diane, thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, Leslie Stahl and others on Grown-Ups Who Do Internships. Stay with us.